Welcome to the Nail Your Nutrition podcast, a podcast focused on training for endurance activity. I'm Sarah, a registered dietitian and toddler mom in the Washington, D.C. area. I write the blog Bucket List Tummy and focus most of my work on running and endurance athletes, as well as merging the principles of sports nutrition with the principles of intuitive eating.
And I'm Marita, a sports dietitian and fellow toddler mom in Pensacola, Florida. I work with endurance athletes at my private practice, Eat to Compete. My goal is to help athletes learn to fuel their training with intuitive eating. We are two sports dietitians and moms here to break down the nutrition science to make training more fun and approachable for you. Whether you're a novice athlete, a weekend warrior, a mom trying to fit in a consistent exercise schedule, or a top finisher at big races, we want to help you understand the importance of fueling well. We're so glad to have you here and would appreciate you spreading the word or sharing this episode or podcast with a friend, family member, training partner, coworker, or anyone you would think would enjoy it. If you have a minute, please leave us a review wherever you subscribe to your podcast, as that really helps the show. Now let's get to today's episode.
This episode is brought to you by your Nail Your Nutrition self-paced fueling course. Whether you're a new or seasoned athlete, the Nail Your Nutrition course offers all of the information needed to prepare you, fuel you, and help you recover from endurance activity. The Nail Your Nutrition course has modules on macronutrient distribution, hydration and electrolytes, endurance needs for female athletes, vegans and vegetarians, nutrients of concern, supplements, tips for triathletes and endurance, ultra endurance runners, tips for relative energy deficiency, and more. We also include case studies to tie everything together, as well as videos and downloadable handouts. Plus, you have lifetime access to the course. That's right, you have access forever with updated scientific sports nutrition guidelines, practical tips for how to implement them, and you also have access to a private community where you can collaborate with other course members. To join the course and get started today, head to nailyournutrition.podia.com. That's nailyournutrition.podia.com, or head to the link in the show notes. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Hey, athletes. Today, Sarah and I are chatting with Jessica Vallant, physical therapist and Pilates instructor. Jessica gave us so much insight into how and why endurance athletes get injured, the most common injuries she sees in endurance athletes, and exactly how to fix them, what we can do to climb out of the injury cycle, and what the bare minimum amount of work is required to stay injury-free, something we can all appreciate and probably all want. We also touched on prolapse and Jessica's journey with it, something not commonly discussed openly, but we think should be. For the second half of this episode, we dove into pregnancy and how we can be modifying what we're doing running and strength-wise in order to stay injury-free for life, including avoiding abdominal separation or diastasis recti. Jessica also goes over the guidelines she recommends for returning to running and fitness postpartum. Lots to unpack and discuss here, obviously. This is one you'll have to listen to a few times and take notes. We hope you enjoy this episode. Let's dive in. Welcome to today's episode. I am personally super excited because I am a huge, huge fan of Jessica Vallant. She is a physical therapist and Pilates instructor, and I am pretty sure I have liked every single one of your videos on YouTube, and I have several of your programs, especially the prenatal one that I'm doing for the second time. So I am honored to have you on the podcast today, and we're so excited to pick your brain. Jessica, if you can tell us about you personally and professionally, give us a lowdown on you.
Sure. I became a physical therapist, like I said, about 20 years ago. I was, 21 years old. I think I just always knew that that's what I wanted to do. So I was really lucky. I knew at a young age, and that was my goal. And I went to school in Denver, PT school in Denver, and I got a job. And within the first 6 months, our boss came in and said, hey, there's this thing called Pilates. It's really popular right now, because this was in 2000. It's really popular, and we're going to bring reformers into all the clinics, and who would like to be trained? And I shot my hand up, and I did not know what Pilates was, but if they were paying for me to get trained in something, I was going to do it. And I did, and it really led the course for the rest of my career. I fell in love with it and what it could do for clients and what it could do in rehabilitation, how I was able to help my patients. So I started combining the two, and I ended up working at a high-end gym here in Denver where I ran their Pilates program and started their physical therapy program. And I kind of started to help various PT clinics add Pilates We moved to Hawaii. My boyfriend at the time is now my husband. We moved to Hawaii in 2006 and we opened our own clinics there. So I've kind of always done both. And then we had our first child, a daughter. She's 7 and a half. And after that, I realized I just couldn't do both. I couldn't run two studios and 19 staff members and be a mom to a newborn. A lot of people can. It's just I did not have the skill set to do both things. So we sold our studios, and that's when I really started transferring everything online. So that kind of led me to where I am now. I also was diagnosed with endometriosis in 2005. I've been through three abdominal surgeries for that, including two rounds of IVF. I was diagnosed with three different prolapses after the birth of our first daughter. And so I went through a lot with that. And then last year I had a hysterectomy and prolapse and pelvic floor repair. So that kind of has led me into the women's health space. I never had a goal for being in women's health, but when life throws it all at you and you have to learn, you realize, gosh, there's not enough information out there. I want to be the one to help people get that information. So that is where I am.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing. Why don't we dive into talking about your prolapse then? Because that's really not discussed ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I've only talked to one friend about it briefly after she gave birth. And that's just because she was afraid that that might have been the case. And it turned out it wasn't. And I actually sent her some of your videos just in case. Yeah. But let's talk about that if you feel open to talking about your journey with prolapse.
Yeah, oh, for sure. It's amazing how common it is. Up to half of women will experience prolapse sometime in their lifetime, but most of us have no idea what it is. I, even as a physical therapist and Pilates teacher, had no idea what it was whatsoever. It's just not talked about, like you said, or it's not understood. And that's a big soapbox of mine. I feel like women especially have to be such advocates for ourselves because we aren't understood in general. Like with endometriosis, it takes 7 years for a woman to be diagnosed correctly. Just because we're not always listened to, we kind of get bounced around, or especially after birth, people say, oh, it's just normal. You're just recovering from birth. Well, normal and what you should be dealing with are two different things. Sure, it might be normal to be healing after birth, but you shouldn't have to just go through pain assuming it'll someday go away or that it's something you just have to live with. So definitely for everyone listening, be an advocate for yourself. Don't just listen to the fact that, oh, you'll be fine. Oh, this is normal. Well, maybe, but also you should get help. There are definitely things we can do to help ourselves. So with myself, with our daughter, I had a 42-hour labor, and of that, I pushed for 4 and she was vacuumed out. And all of those, unbeknownst to me, are very high precursors for a possible prolapse. So this was within a week after getting home and giving birth. I'm like, gosh, I should probably check my stitches, which a lot of us do. Like, what's going on down there? And just to be graphic for you all, I ended up 5 minutes later literally Googling pink golf ball hanging out of my vagina. That's what I Googled. And it said prolapse. And I called my doctor. I'm like, I think I might have a prolapse. And I went in the next day and he said, sure, you do. It's a small one. No big deal. Go see a PT if you want. Goodbye. And that's all I was told completely. So that was the start to my journey. And I will say I have a ton of resources if people have more questions. For many women, it does resolve. And so I don't want to scare anyone at all into thinking that they'll need surgery. I am a rare case and I am a small portion of the population that needs surgery for it. Many women, if it happens after birth, it will resolve. It can take through breastfeeding though to resolve because your hormones are still so crazy and your tissues are still really loose the entire time you're nursing. So if you suspect that you have a prolapse, my advice is immediately go see a women's health physical therapist. So you can see your OBGYN, but to be honest, it is not their specialty. And I did not know that for 7 years until I finally saw a urogynecologist. So what I would do first is see a women's health physical therapist who does internal work. So you can look up women's health physical therapist or pelvic floor physical therapist. Make sure they do internal work. And they will be your touchstone to tell you what's going on, if your muscles are contracting correctly, and kind of give you a guidepost of what the journey might look like. Then down the line, if you feel like you need more see a urogynecologist. That's who specializes in prolapses. I got so much more information finally when I decided to finally see a urogynecologist. So that was my experience. I had the prolapse. I was able to manage it. I just found a way to manage it for 7 years. And then finally, last year, had surgery to repair them. I ended up with a cystocele, which is a bladder prolapse, a rectocele, which is a rectal prolapse, which is very common, and a uterine prolapse. So I had to have all those repaired. And now here I am.
And that was with your first birth, correct? Yes. So did all of that return after your second?
So it never really went away. So they grade prolapses 1, 2, 3, 4. And I was grade 3 and 4 when it actually, like, I actually had a bulge come hanging out. And so that's a grade 3 and 4. And so that you can learn to manage it, but typically physical therapy isn't going to help reverse it once it's gone that far. So I just, like I said, I had managed it because I knew we wanted to have more kids. I was not sure at all if I wanted to ever have surgery. So I was like, I'll just learn to manage this for my lifestyle. So if you choose to go that route, if you are in that place, definitely don't make any decisions till you're done with babies completely. And yes, it can get worse with a second one, but it didn't get so much worse that people think, like, people really are concerned talking to me. It wasn't even a thought in the back of my head. I mean, I wanted a second baby so much, and we had gone through the 2 rounds of IVF. Like, I would have done anything. So that, you know, making my prolapse worse was, to be honest, at that point, kind of in the back of my head, because I'm like, I'll just deal with this later. I just want this baby healthy and here. But yes, it did get a little bit worse for sure afterwards, but it was more about my hormones at that point. You know, everything was loose again. And then I got back to the point that I was between babies. But yes, further babies can make it worse. So what I would say is just make sure you see that women's health PT and really help deal with it, because you can heal it. You definitely can. And then a big thing also is knowing what you should not be doing so that you don't make it worse and that you help to heal it. Because the problem is, I was sprinting up and down my block 8 weeks after that gnarly birth with her, because the doctor says, oh, yep, you're fine. Go do whatever you want. And so I was like, gosh, I guess that's what I should be doing. So I guarantee you, I did more harm to myself than good at that point. Now I know better. With my second birth, I knew a lot better.
Thank you so much for sharing that story and for being so outspoken about it, because like you said, it's not talked about. So just knowing a prominent figure like yourself went through it and are sharing about it, I'm sure that helps with education so much.
Yep. Yeah. You'd be amazed the amount of messages I get from women who have been diagnosed and who have no one to talk to, and they're scared. So definitely, if anyone's listening, you're not alone at all. Get out of the forums. They're scary places. And go to a team member who's going to help support you and give you positive stories and hope about it. Because, like, you can go to my YouTube channel and 90% of the workouts there were filmed when I had a prolapse before my surgery. So you very much can live a normal life. I didn't run. Like, there are things I definitely worked around because I didn't want to make it worse. And it bothered me. I didn't run. I peed a lot. So I was always finding the bathroom. I wasn't a fan of squat jumps, those kind of things. But again, I just learned to find and do the things that I wanted to do.
And you mentioned having modifications that you can do after. Obviously, you can manage it and you can, quote unquote, fix it. But what about before, during pregnancy? Is there anything you can do to maybe decrease the risk of having it in the first place, whether that be exercises to avoid or exercises to do or things to strengthen?
That's a good question. So yes and no. There are definitely things that I say to avoid during pregnancy, but they're more about simply having a healthy pelvic floor and avoiding diastasis recti. Prolapse, the highest occurrence happens due to birth, honestly. And so sometimes it's just something that you can't avoid. That being said, you can set yourself up, you know, to have a higher probability of it if you're trashing your pelvic floor during pregnancy. So what I, as a physical therapist and doing this a long time, I tell women, and I know people don't like it, so just take a deep breath, it's going to be okay. But I tell people during pregnancy, no crunches, no planks, no running or jumping. During all of pregnancy, And I know people do it. Like, I absolutely do. And I know some people do fine. That's it. You just don't really know if you're going to be that person who has a super strong, fine pelvic floor. You don't. So I know people who do okay with it. But the very best way to make sure you can avoid those things is avoiding those exercises during pregnancy. And I think sometimes even more importantly is avoiding them for the first 16 weeks after you give birth. Because I think of it this way, as a physical therapist, if somebody comes to me with an ankle sprain, I have a really specific way to rehab that. I'm going to rest for a certain amount of time and ice and massage. And then I start a certain type of exercise. And then I move to the next phase and the next phase and the next phase until we've built them back up to running safely. Pregnancy, we don't do that. We tell people don't do anything for 8 weeks, like nothing. And then at 8 weeks, we say, oh, now you can go do whatever you want. Like, just from a rehab standpoint, that makes no sense. Like, of course you're going to get injured if you tell anyone to rest completely for 8 weeks and then suddenly they can do whatever they want. So if you think of it that way, it kind of makes sense that we should build back up slowly. The other thing is your hormones are still so crazy after you give birth, especially if you're nursing. And one of those biggest ones is called relaxin. It makes your joints and your ligaments and your muscles really loose. We want that to give birth because we need that pelvic bowl to open up. The problem is it can't just aim at the pelvic bowl. It makes all of your ligaments and your muscles and your joints really loose. And so you are asking your body to support you in activities that might have been normal a year ago that suddenly are different simply because your body is a little bit different. And so you don't want to just jump back into it. And then finally, what happens during pregnancy is the pelvic floor does get stretched out. There's no way it doesn't. I mean, the baby starts to descend, our pelvic bowl opens. And so you have this long laxity happening, meaning it's getting looser and longer over time. And so just imagine if you have that, it's like a hammock. Like if you saw, I'm talking with my hands right now in my office, but it's like a hammock down there and you've stretched it out. And then you have a baby on top of it. And then you are running. So suddenly you have this really stretched out hammock and you're bouncing like a bowling ball on it, asking it to stay really stable. And that is literally what you are doing when you're running, when you're pregnant. Again, I am not talking safety to the baby whatsoever. I know the doctors say that's safe. It's really more from a physical therapy standpoint of the best way you can keep your pelvic floor healthy and prevent incontinence, diastasis recti, prolapse, pain, all of those things, is to just decide, you know what, I'm going to do some other things while I'm pregnant. I can do it. And I know that's hard because we lose our sense of body. We lose our sense of self. Like, all I wanted after I gave birth was just to have my body back, you know, just to do my workouts again. And like I said, I had to kind of learn the hard way that it takes a little bit of time to get that back. Looking back, it seems like a short amount of time. When you're in it, it feels like a long time. But just think of it, the baby's in for 10 months. Give your body 10 months to get back to where you're going to have a strong body that you're empowered in again. Give yourself time and grace. Get off social media and the people who are running marathons at 6 weeks postpartum. That's just crazy town.
Oh my gosh. I think you perfectly summed up how Sarah and I both feel in our postpartum times and during pregnancy. We both stopped running when it just didn't feel right. And even then I was like running like once a week, but still. And we were both, Sarah is about 6 months postpartum and I waited 16 weeks after my son to start running again. And it still just felt weird. And you're so right. You want to just be able to go back to what you were doing and you just can't, and that's okay. And we have to just accept that.
Absolutely. And to remember, you will be back there again. Like, you absolutely will. You will have your body back. You'll have your time back. And I know it's hard. And like I said, many people will be safe. I don't drive down the road and see pregnant women running and think, oh my gosh, stop. Like, I don't. Sometimes I think, gosh, I wish I could have done, like, I wish my pelvic floor was strong enough. Some of us are just made a little differently. But from a prevention standpoint, and from so many clients I see, that is my best advice on what you can avoid for that amount of time to set yourself up for the best success.
And so you said during pregnancy, we should avoid planks, crunches, jumping, running, right? Yep. So I know, like, for instance, on Peloton, they have a new prenatal program with Robin, who is my favorite instructor. I'm not going to bash Robin, but she's doing like full up planks, even in the prenatal yoga. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this anymore, because I know that women are competitive, right? Especially as athletes. So even though we're pregnant, we're probably going to be like, oh, it's fine. I'm just going to do this plank. It's not that big of a deal, and push through.
Work harder mentality.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not healthy. And so we should avoid all of those things throughout the duration of pregnancy, or just in the second and third trimester? Like, what's your recommendation on that?
Great question. So, and honestly, my story is my first pregnancy, I did all of it. Like, I taught Pilates teacher training, and I was doing teasers and crazy ab stuff in my second pregnancy. My first pregnancy, I was doing all that. And then in my second, after I'd been through my issues, I'm like, maybe I won't this time around. We know there's a higher incidence of diastasis recti, of separated abs, when you include abdominal work like that during pregnancy. So I tell people, if you're feeling good in that first trimester, you're probably still fine to do that, because you don't have a belly yet. Your abdominal muscles are not being stretched yet. So if the doctor says it's fine, you were probably safe to do those things. Your hormones have started changing though immediately. So keep that in mind. Your body's already going to feel different. Once you start having a belly, once the baby starts growing, your rectus abdominis starts to get pulled apart. Like, there is no possible way it can't when you are pregnant. It just does. It does to make room for your growing belly. And once it pulls apart, those muscles aren't working correctly anymore to do a crunch or a plank. Like, they can't, because they're too long. It's muscle length tension relationship is what we call it. Muscles work perfectly when they are crossed in perfect alignment. And if they're stretched too much, they can't actually work correctly. So if you try to do a crunch or a plank and you are 8 or 9 months pregnant, you are not using your rectus abdominis anymore. You're actually just pulling them farther apart. Like, you are causing a diastasis recti. Will it go back after birth? Yeah. In a lot of women, it does, actually. Even if you trash it during pregnancy, it very well might resolve after, but it really might not. And I see a lot of women where it doesn't. So I just consider myself super lucky after the first one that I didn't actually trash my rectus abdominis, but you can. So I tell people to avoid those at least in the second and third trimesters, because of that, because you can actually give yourself a DR. And then also, I kind of look at it at this point, I'm like, why? Like, I can wait 10 months to do a plank. It's okay. I know in the heat of the moment, like you said, we're competitive and we want to, and we're feeling just so ugh, right? You're pregnant and that's how you feel. Like, what is happening to me? What is going on? But I tell people, pregnancy is not the time to get your PRs. It's not the time to increase your speed or increase your time. It is just your time to manage and just love on your body and this amazing thing that's happening, even when it feels crazy. So we do other things. Like, I have a whole prenatal series, and there is kind of I'm saying in air quotes, there's a core video in each trimester, because we can still do a lot to work through the core, but I avoid that rectus abdominis work of planks and crunches.
And we should avoid coning, right?
Yes, always avoid that coning. And that's afterwards too. So coning happens because you have a diastasis recti. That's why you have separated your ab muscles. And that's when coning occurs. So that's how you definitely know you need to avoid ab work if that's happening, for sure.
And how do you know once it's resolved? Is that just ideally working with a pelvic floor physical therapist, or someone to kind of, I know with mine, she kind of does the finger test to see how much space is between them. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what we do. And so if it is a DR, again, like I said, I always recommend a women's health physio at least the first few times. And to be honest, we're one of the only developed countries in the world that don't require that, that don't really recommend it afterwards. Like, we're the only one. Everyone else, it's automatic to go see a women's health PT after birth.
Crazy.
And so, yeah, it is crazy. But if it is a DR, you don't necessarily need an internal women's health PT, just to let you know. Like, I am a women's health PT. I don't do internal work, but I can see people for sure for DRs. And that's exactly what we do. We just test. Two finger widths is what's considered a diagnosis of a DR. So if you have one finger width, we don't even diagnose it as a DR anymore. And I let people start getting back into planks and crunches and all that. So you just want to give your body time to resolve. You don't test yourself for a DR when you're pregnant, because again, you have to crunch to test yourself. So you could just make it worse. And we can't feel it anyway. They're so stretched with the belly, we can't feel it. So don't worry about it during, but right away after we can test. And as long as you follow the kind of protocols, like I mentioned, to not crunch, not plank for 4 months. I actually have a diastasis recta. I think I have two on YouTube, free workouts that you can start doing right away that are safe for DR. And then what we do, what I do at least, is I check again throughout. And at that 4 month postpartum mark, if the diastasis has started to heal itself, if it's less than two finger widths, then, like I said, I move on to planks and I start adding those other things. If it hasn't yet, then I take a couple more months of doing the modified program.
Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, this is especially pertinent since our population is endurance athletes who are very much into training. Most of us, myself included, after the first pregnancy, got back too early, sooner than I should have. This is important information to know for the long term.
Yep. Yes, definitely. And what I tell people too, because it's so hard, we really do focus on what we can't do. Start to focus on what you can do, because there's actually a ton you can do afterwards. Walking, and research shows us this, walking is one of the very, very best things that we can do for our body, even for caloric loss and weight loss and fat loss, which I know people are concerned with. Walking is great. So try not to think of walking as easy. Just think of it as, great, I'm going to build my endurance back up with some walking. I started back with weights and squats and all of that stuff afterwards. There's a lot of Pilates you can still do. You just want to modify those things. But if you focus on the things you can do, I find that makes it a little bit easier.
And gives you that break from being in full mom mode to, oh, I feel like myself again a little bit.
For
and doing the things that you still enjoy without injuring yourself or increasing that DR.
Yes.
Exactly. I love that. Thanks for sharing all of that, Jessica. That's so helpful.
Yeah. And it will help you actually, it'll help you when you get back to your endurance sport also. So we know, again, from research and in physical therapy and in training, that when you train muscle groups in one way, you have the benefits of literally cross-training. You get better at your other activity. You don't have to practice that activity to get better at it. You can do something else and actually still get better. So I find if you can almost take advantage of that break and work on your cross training, like some Pilates and glute activation and inner and outer thigh activation and upper back stretching, that's what I give to my runners. And if you can work on that, you might find you actually get back to be a better and stronger runner later on.
Yes, exactly. And so to pivot into that, let's talk about injuries and in endurance. So I mentioned before that I've done your knee pain video before. I love your hip video. All of them are, I mean, like under what, 10, 15 minutes. And I've been doing that for years. And they are so helpful, especially when you maybe don't have the time to go to a pelvic floor or to go to a physical therapist, or if you just need to go into maintenance mode and hopefully avoid that injury long term. So, and I would say your YouTube is chock full of different injury workouts for all endurance athletes. So tell us, what should runners and any other endurance athlete be doing to avoid injuries? Is it like hip strength, glutes, core? What's like the main thing that we should be focusing on? Or is it kind of the whole body approach?
Good question. So yes, my endurance athletes, who I love you so much. and I'm going to put cyclists into this too. Swimmers, I know, are endurance athletes, but there's some different things I need to do with their bodies. But cyclists have very similar issues to runners. So we can address kind of both. What happens mentally, at least I know with endurance athletes, is you run. That's what you do. You run, you run, you run, and you don't have time to really do anything else because you're running so much, and then you have your families and your businesses and all of those things. So then you get injured because all you're doing is running, and then you get really sad that you can't run, and then you finally heal and all you do is start running again. And so it's like this cycle versus we need to cross train. Like that's honestly what has to happen. And I think the reason that scares endurance athletes is they think, oh my gosh, 3 days a week, I need to be doing 35 minutes of something else. I don't have time for that, or that's going to take away from my running, or I'm going to bulk up and actually end up losing my speed. And so first, I think let's just take that idea out of cross training. If that stresses you out, like if your heart rate just went up for me to say cross training, instead think about like what I, like exactly what you said, what I try to give on YouTube or what I give as a physical therapist is, this is something I want you to do 10 minutes every day. And if every day is too much, then give me 10 minutes every other day. That's it. Like that's how you can think of cross training. I'm not going to ask you or make you to give up a running day. If you can do that down the line and add weights, awesome. That's going to be a healthier place for you. But if you're not ready for that, think of it more as just adding this 10 minutes a day. And if you can, it will help. More even than stretching, I recommend hip strength, because what happens, runners and cyclists, you're in one plane of motion all the time. So your quads are great. Your hamstrings are pretty good. Your calves are pretty good. Your inner thigh and your outer thigh, anything that works outside of that one plane of motion tends to get very weak, and it doesn't understand anymore how to stabilize the hip and the entire lower leg. And that's when ITB syndrome comes in and patellofemoral syndrome and chondromalacia comes in and hip bursitis and piriformis syndrome. Hamstring tendonitis is a big one because the hamstrings are overworking because nothing else is supporting them. So that's what I see in runners. Those are the main things. So what we do is we work on hip strength. And then if you want some ankle mobility, that's a really big one. We know that knees are usually affected most from hip strength and ankle mobility. And then the big secret one that I see a big benefit to is upper spine mobility. So thoracic spine. So that place between your shoulder blades, I try to get it open and extended. Those alone will help. And that's what, like you said, my routines, like the hip pain routine, knee pain. And then just last week, I came out with a Pilates for runners routine that I think is about 15 minutes long. And that will hit all of those. And core is included in that. I know core is a really big one, but the cool thing is if you do those exercises right, like the what I try to do in my videos is it's kind of double duty. I do hips with the core involved so that it's not just more upon more upon more. It's like, oh, this is my one workout for runners. Great. That's what I'm going to add. I don't have to do hips and then my core one later and then this one later and this one later, because that can be a lot.
And you kind of mentioned this, but just to tie it all together, can you talk about some of the benefits of Pilates for endurance athletes? I mean, you talked about hitting those important muscle groups, and ideally we're doing body weight strength, which I'm assuming has a lot of performance benefits. So what's your take on that?
So I think many different things can be used to be beneficial for cross training. I'm a Pilates teacher, but I also, like, I just got done with a 30-minute weightlifting session outside my office here because that's what I wanted to do today. I try to mix it up too. So you guys already have the running down. In a perfect world, I would add probably 2 days of weights for runners and then 1 day of Pilates slash maybe yoga for the stretching and the benefits of that. Like, that'd be a perfect world. But like I said, that's probably a lot for people to wrap their minds around when they're already running so much. So I would say like 2 days a week where we do a short one that's Pilates with some weights, with some stretching. The reason I love Pilates is because it really gets a benefit of strength and in the muscles that aren't typically used. And it's giving you mobility at the same time. So a lot of times people will hear, oh, it's lengthening the muscles. Well, we can't physically actually lengthen the muscles. But what's cool about Pilates is it is giving you mobility in the joints while we are strengthening you. So yoga, I love personally, and I know a lot of runners love it for the stretching benefits. It's just not usually adding strength in the physical therapy places that I need it added. Like, it's not getting specifically those inner and outer thighs, the hip abductor and adductor. It's not getting the glute activation I really like. So that's why I tend to turn to Pilates when it's that baseline physical therapy mind frame that I'm going for.
And when you say strength training, you're talking about like lifting up weights, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Exactly. Or resistance bands too. So you can absolutely use your body weight, Running is, like you said, using your body weight, but it's just in that same plane of motion all the time, all the time, all the time. And because it's joint compression at the same time, there's just different things that happen with it. But running is like one of the best things you can do for osteoporosis prevention. I mean, so you are helping your bone strength, you're helping your muscles, you're helping your joint receptors. So all of those are great things. But again, like I don't always consider it resistance training because especially with endurance athletes, it's just a different set of muscle fibers, right? I mean, it's just totally those endurance muscle fibers that are working versus sprinting would be more similar to traditional strength training actually.
Okay. And so you're saying like, are you talking about traditional strength training, like squats and lunges and then like a blend of Pilates in there or what exactly do you recommend? Okay.
Exactly. That's what I'll do a lot of times is I will do some of both. Like I'm going to do lunges, but for the bigger bang for the buck, I am going to make you do a lunge holding one weight in one hand with your arm overhead. You have the other foot back, you're doing a lunge, and then you're driving your knee up into a balance position at the top. So we get core involved with that because we're working what's called a muscle sling. I know I'm getting complicated. And then we have some balance involved in it. And then I'll get down on the floor and do ab and plank work. So that's what I try to do with my runners is, like I said, kind of that blend. So we're getting a little bit of all of it. I don't think runners need to go. I don't think anyone needs to go, especially in this day. I mean, we're in COVID world. Nobody needs to feel like, oh my gosh, I have to be at the gym lifting 50 pounds. No, no. If you have a 5 and a 10 pound weight at home, we can do whatever we need to do. If you have a resistance band, we can do whatever we need to do.
Yeah, I think I speak for most runners when I say if you can just combine it all into one workout and I don't have to do 57 different things, count me in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. And I would say like if you want those two things that, and you're pretty healthy, if you don't have injuries like you had mentioned, go to YouTube and find my Pilates for Runners workout. And that's going to be mostly that Pilates kind of standpoint. So you're going to get some abs and you're going to get your hip work. And then I have a Pilates with weights challenge. And that's going to add some of your strength training. And then the last one that could be beneficial is a lot of any of them that you feel like doing would be fine. But there's a glute strengthening specifically for glutes. And that's really great for runners too. So those would be some three good options.
Yes, definitely. We'll link to those in the show notes for sure.
Great.
So how can having more strength improve your speed and performance in running, if at all? Do you see those benefits go both ways?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. The stronger you are, the faster you'll be. And again, if you think of it more, of that sprint kind of component and how fast you can get out of the gate, that is strength. So that's calf strength, that's quad strength, that's glute strength, that's all the above. The other thing that strength training does, well, in any kind of cross training, so it's just kind of confusing the body. You're making your body work in different ways. And what that does is it helps that brain-body connection. It's your brain to your joint receptors and your muscle receptors, which allows your body to respond faster. It allows you, so think trail running. It's really great for like the trail running idea. It allows your body to respond faster and to be quicker. It'll give you better leg turnover, you know, if you're trying to go for that kind of speed. And then it'll really help prevent injury. And it doesn't have, like I said, it doesn't have to be a lot because sprinting is very different than endurance running. I don't want endurance runners to be like sprinters and vice versa because they're different. We're training the body in very different ways and it's a very different skill set. But I want each of those bodies to have that benefit in the joint receptors and the muscle receptors so that you can be almost fluid in what's thrown at you when you're running. You want to be able to react very quickly to it.
And probably in your day-to-day life too.
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. That idea when you can catch it, when you just start to fall and you can catch yourself, that's good receptor activity. That's you being able to respond to stressors in your environment. And strength training helps with that.
What are some of the most common injuries that you see in athletes? And how much is due to maybe overuse or overtraining?
I see a lot of hamstring tendonitis. And what's interesting about all of these, so hamstring tendonitis, a lot of knee pain. I mean, that might be the most common. Just I'm going to give you a generic umbrella term of knee pain. See a lot of those two things. And then a lot of like low back pain. Again, very generic. And the reason they're generic is because, so I'll give you an example. If you're not kind of doing some cross training to think about your core, so your lower abdominal muscles, and this is perfect example for women coming back after pregnancy too, especially if there was a C-section involved. Your lower abdominal muscles, called your transversus abdominis, and it is meant to turn on in an anticipatory way. So when you even think about taking a step, that muscle turns on to help stabilize your pelvis, stabilize your low back, and everything that's happening down there. When there's any kind of pain, trauma, or if it simply doesn't quite know how to work, it turns off. And so something feels like it has to work in that anticipatory way. It's like, well, something has to stabilize. The hamstrings do it. We know from EMG studies that the hamstrings are the ones that do it. So people who come into me with chronic hamstring tightness and chronic hamstring tendonitis, one of the first things I do is I look at lower abdominal strength and then hip strength around that as well. So that's why I say, sometimes I can give you specific diagnoses, but a lot of times it's more peeling back the layers and saying, you know what, you're getting that low back pain because your hip abductor on the right isn't actually firing the way it should. So your pelvis is dropping on the right every single time you stride forward. And so you're getting this low back pain. So let's strengthen that hip abductor on the right. Let's look at why that's happening. And then your low back pain will go away. In a perfect world.
That makes sense. And I'm fairly certain that's why. That's what happened to me. I had PTTD, posterior tibial tendonitis. Yeah. And my physical therapist was like, your thoracic spine is too tight. And had a C-section and you're not firing in your hips. And I'm like, oh, wow. This is so fun. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And shin splints is the same. When someone comes in for shin splints, I'm like, oh, yep, got it. We got to look at your ankle mobility. We need to look at your hip strength and your thoracic spine mobility. Exactly. I mean, and that is why, like, everyone is so different. And it is important if you have specific goals or if you aren't getting better, see someone. You can see me virtually. You can see someone in person, whatever works for you, see someone. But until you can get to that point, there are a lot of general things we can have someone do that will hit, like you said, many of those issues. The posterior tibial tendonitis, very common one. And that knee pain is too. I mean, that probably might be one of the most common ones I see. Mm-hmm. The chondromalacia, the patellofemoral pain, tibial tendonitis, IT band a lot of times down at the knee. But same, I treat them almost all similarly. I got to mobilize your ankle. And I need to strengthen your hip. Your hip muscles are the ones that actually determine where your kneecap is traveling.
So should endurance athletes be focusing on hip strength then along with their strength training that you were talking about earlier? Just to avoid
If I had to pick, If I had to pick two things, it'd be hip strength. So adductors, abductors, glutes, and thoracic spine stretches. Oh. And I have a video for that too. So I have a mid back or middle back stretches and strengthening routine.
Okay. And how long do you think that athletes are out? How long do you say no running or anything like that? I know that's like probably not the most general question.
I laugh because it's like, how long are they out or how long should they be out are two very different things. You know, everybody's so different. I have some who won't stop. And that's fine. I'm going to work with that. That's okay. We do what we got to do to stay mentally sane sometimes. And so I am not going to tell someone to completely stop running ever if they need that for mental sanity. I will just try to work around it and say, you know what? Can you give me less? Can you give me less hills? Can you just not train for your race right now so that we can help this not come back in the future? Very rarely do I tell people you absolutely can't. Unless, again, it's pregnancy or postpartum or things where we have a clear, hey, we got to let you heal. So I try to work with that really hard so that people don't feel like they've lost the one thing that they want to do. But also there are times that we do just need to take a break. 2 weeks. I tell people to give me 2 weeks. Like, that's it. Give me 2 weeks and let's see where you are after that. Because to me, if you take 6 weeks off an activity and you're still having pain, then there's probably something else going on we need to look at. Like, if that activity was the thing causing you the problems, then hopefully after 6 weeks of not doing it, we're going to see some benefits. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It gets lots of layers we peel off.
Yeah. And I like how it's kind of interesting thinking how like these knee injuries or other injuries are sort of downstream from the fact that maybe what we do upstream is strengthen the hips and things that you're talking about.
Yeah. No, that's a perfect way to put it actually. Yes. It, once the symptoms come up like that, yeah, you're so far down the onion, like you're on the outer layers of the onion. So when I see someone individually for physical therapy, I'm like, we have to peel back all these layers and get to the core. And I'm going to rebuild you from the core. Because I could tell, like all of you guys listening, if you're endurance athletes and you're runners, like you're strong. So if you came to me with knee pain, I could tell you to go home and do 100 squats as part of your physical therapy. And you would do it because your body's going to find a way and you're determined. And by golly, I'm going to do it because she said to. But the problem is you're going to use those old patterns that got you here to do those squats. So I need to totally peel back those layers and get to the heart of why it's happening. And then I build you back up to the squats and the running you want to do, but in this new way that hopefully your foundation is stronger. Right.
And you touched on this a little bit earlier, but we hear the word core thrown around all the time, like strengthen your core. So can you explain to us like what exactly our core is and how we can keep it strong to keep us out on the roads?
Yeah, that's a great question too, because it's kind of become like this kitschy term, like you're going to work your core, but exactly what is it? Yep. So the way I explain the core is you have a box. The top of the box is your diaphragm. So your breathing, hugely important. Your thoracic spine, really important because you're way up on your diaphragm. The bottom of your box is your pelvic floor. So the pelvic floor is really important too. Then you've got the front of the box, which is like your obliques and your rectus abdominis. You've got the back of the box, which is actually your back muscles. We tend to forget about those in the back body. And then supporting all that are your hips and your pelvis and your transversus abdominis. So that's how I think of the core, is that whole box. And then in addition to that, it is the center midline of our body. It's like the train station that everything has to go through to get anywhere else. So every movement we do, then a squat or run, a stroke in swimming, moves through that box. And it all should be moving kind of succinctly. So we have something called muscle slings, the way our body works. One example is your lats on your right. So that's on your back. They cross the body and they work with your left hip abductor. So I can do exercises or just even move my right arm and there's something happening in my left hip. Because again, if you picture that box, that signal is moving through and crossing to the other side. So that's why the perfect, and again, lots of air quotes going here, the perfect core workout to me doesn't involve a single crunch, because a crunch actually isn't functional. Like if you think about it, when in the world in life are you doing a crunch? Probably really never, unless you're just in bed and you're just kind of popping up out of bed. That's kind of a crunch. But we do it because, you know, aesthetically it can look good eventually and we think we should. So when I think of working the core, I'm doing a lot more of those functional activities. I'm doing a lot of things on all fours, legs and arm lifts. I'm doing a lot of planks and side planks and leg lifts and planks. I'm doing a lot of lunges from the ground up and those kind of things. That's a long answer, but hopefully that helps.
No, that does help. And I feel like when one part of it kind of goes awry, the whole rest of the chain does. Yeah. Like, for instance, when I was injured last year, my physical therapist was like, oh, you know, I think you tend to hunch over a lot when you're nursing. And so I had like zero mobility in my upper area. Yep. And so that was really affecting my running form. And it's like, I didn't even think about that. And even not just nursing, but just as moms, we tend to like crunch over our babies, right?
Yes, so it's absolutely,
it's something that all works together in that kinetic chain for sure.
Yep. Yeah. And if you picture kind of that cardboard box, almost picture the backside of it, like getting wet or being out in the sun, and it starts to collapse. It's not like it collapses on its own. Like you said, you've got corners doing funky things in the front now, and the back gets all wobbly and weird and wrinkled. And that's exactly how it works in our bodies. Yeah. And then you throw in a baby, going back to the pregnancy idea, you throw in a baby and your lungs are smushed and your stomach's smushed and everything's crazy. I mean, that's just even more so. The box is totally whacked then until it has time to heal.
Yeah.
So if you have this totally crazy box and then you're trying to run at 6 weeks, it's just like an accordion that collapses.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to support it again.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that's really the only way that you can be healthy long term, hopefully.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So Jessica, all of this, you just have so much knowledge. So how do you balance running a business, your YouTube channel? I've been seeing you on Reels and you're doing fantastic social media work, working out, and being a mom of two. How are you balancing all of that?
I don't balance it. That's the first thing I'll tell everyone. I don't know if there's balance. I think it's a thing that sounds really nice. And we as moms especially will just kill ourselves trying to achieve it, right? Because we think we should. I try to give myself grace, and that's really hard. I have set some boundaries, and that's helpful. So I, like everyone else, my kids, so I have a 7.5-year-old and a 3-year-old. They were both in school, you know, come till March. My son was in school 3 days a week. And then in March, they both came home full time. So I'm just like everyone else trying to figure it all out. I set some boundaries. So my boundaries are when, in theory, a school day is done, let's say they are back in school, I am done with work. So if that's 3 o'clock, I am done until they're asleep. And that doesn't mean I'm not checking email. I might have to check email and answer, and I'm not great at it, but I am not sitting and doing projects. That's my time to be with them. And then I actually, where the non-balance comes in, I've been up till midnight every night this week working after they're asleep. So I think we also just do what we have to do to make it work. So that is one boundary I have. Another is I try not to do Zoom calls like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to give myself a break and to give all of us a break. My husband's amazing. We have a shared calendar. He works full time too, but we have a shared calendar. So if I have something like this, anything, I'll put it on the calendar and he'll be with the kids if he needs to. And then the rest of the time, you know, I'm with the kids. So I think it's just setting up boundaries if you can, if you have any that work for you. And then also giving yourself a whole lot of grace, because there are times I feel like I'm not good at anything, right? Because I'm like, I'm doing that only halfway and I'm doing that only halfway. And I think sometimes that's okay. I think we don't have to be perfect. I think it's okay to do things halfway sometimes. We can sit on the couch with our kids and watch a movie and not feel like we also need to be baking a homemade apple pie. Like, my kids just want me on that couch watching a movie with them, and they want popcorn out of a bag. They don't care if I bake an apple pie. And sometimes I think YouTube's the same. I just did a webinar yesterday. We want it to be perfect and there's so much comparison, but honestly, just get it up. You know, just do it the best you can with the capacity that you have in your life right now and get it up there and see what happens, and you'll learn from it and you'll move on. And then I guess one other thing I do is with the boundaries, I just say no to some things. Like LinkedIn, that's a big no to me. I don't even know how to log in, to be honest. That's beyond my capacity. Pinterest is a big no. I don't know how to do it. I had to say no to a teaching opportunity this year that was hard, but I think it's just knowing that even if you say no, you're not going to lose an opportunity. Something will come back around to you. It's okay if you have to say no for your sanity or for your family. And I guess I'll give one more, because maybe I do have a lot. I made a decision when my kids were born and I realized I wanted to be home and move my business online, that they are my priority. And when I see women doing amazing things, like amazing things online, that I think, gosh, why can't I do that? Or why shouldn't I? I should be doing that. I sit back and I realize, Jessica, you made this choice. Your choice is to be home and be present. And you don't have the capacity or the time to do more in your business than you're doing right now. And that's okay, because this is your priority choice. So remembering that helps me too. It brings me back to, oh yeah, that is my choice. That's what's important to me. So I just had to decide they are absolutely my priority, and I need to set other things aside if I ever feel like that isn't clear to them.
Those are all such great pieces of advice. And yeah. I think as business owners ourselves, I mean,
so good.
There comes a point where you really do, you have to turn down opportunities. You have to say no to protect your mental state, your well-being, and recognize your priorities, like you said, and being with family and making things work. And it's not always pretty. Sometimes you're tying up loose ends.
Right. No.
been there.
Exactly.
But I appreciate your honesty for that.
Yeah. And I guess I should say one other thing. My family knows they're my priority. They also know that I work. And I think there's no shame in that too. Like if you need to set those boundaries also of, hey, mommy's going to be downstairs for 2 hours. You're with daddy. Like that's something I'm really working on because it's actually hard for me. I feel like, oh, I need to be with them all the time. You don't. You don't. They're fine. They know that I work and they know that I contribute to the family. They know that I love what I do. They ask questions. My kids help me edit sometimes. So there's no shame in that too, in letting them, you know, they come down in my office and they know what I do. They play with my equipment. So it is a balance like in that respect.
Yeah, exactly. But it's good that they know that you work too and you have other things going on outside of them. Yeah. For
sure.
Oh, Jessica, we could pick your brain for hours. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do quick rapid fire and you just answer the first thing that comes into your head and then we'll wrap up. So what is your favorite pre-exercise snack or meal?
To be honest, coffee with collagen. That's what I have every single morning. And that would be my favorite. I'm not really good at, but I don't go on long runs. Everyone should know that. I am not an endurance runner. When I ran a half marathon, I did eat before. But usually if I can just have half of my coffee, I'm good. And then I eat right after. I love eggs right after I work out. Like that's, I'd rather have a post-workout snack than pre, to be honest.
What is your favorite piece of workout attire?
To be honest, whatever I put on in the morning, because I find if I stress out about it, then it limits my workout. So I just try to put on I wear workout clothes every single day. I put on in the morning whatever I could work out in so that I'm ready to work out whenever I have a break.
I love that. Yeah. Top of the pile workout leggings, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
What is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
So I think I said this earlier, but since we talked so much about postpartum and prenatal, I think to remember that your goal is not to find your pre-baby body because you won't. Your body is different. Your life is different. You have been transformed. You are a warrior. You could have a better body for sure. I love my body and I'm stronger than I've ever been before, but it is not my pre-baby body. And when I let go of that and found freedom and not comparing myself to that, it freed me up in a lot of ways.
And probably freed a bunch of mental space too.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my goodness. What's your favorite exercise music?
So today I threw in a spot. So I'm 43 years old, you guys. So I'm probably older than a lot of you. So I had a Spotify playlist of some of my favorites and it was like The Cure and I think 10,000 Maniacs on there. And so it was a lot of my favorite, Vanessa Carlton. So it's like some of my favorites from college. So that's what I listened to today.
Those are all good choices. All good choices. Okay, last one. What's your favorite show to watch during the ongoing quarantine?
So we binged Ted Lasso. That was probably the best one that we've binged during quarantine. Yeah, it's awesome if you haven't seen it. It's so good.
I haven't seen it. I've heard of it. I'll have to add that to the queue.
It's wonderful. I think because it's actually heartwarming, it's not one that you have to worry is going to be such a sad ending every time. Like you can just know, you know what, this is real and it feels good. And I think my mental capacity needed that. My anxiety over the past 10 months needed something that I could just trust would end heartwarming.
Yes, you are not the first person who has mentioned that with that anxiety of watching TV shows. You just need something more comforting right now with everything going on. Jessica, it's been lovely to chat with you. Tell us how people tell us how people can work out with you and connect with you and find you.
So I have a website. I'm Jessica Vallant Pilates everywhere. And so on Instagram, that's a great place. I put daily stuff there. And then I have a website, my YouTube channel, probably if you guys are looking for some of those cross training ideas, YouTube is a great place to find me. And then if you do have any injuries or women's health issues or anything you want a little deeper work with, I do a lot of online virtual consults for physical therapy and Pilates where we just talk through things. And I'll give you a plan to work on at home for 30 days. And then we kind of do a follow-up and see how you're doing. So all of those are great options.
I love that. It makes it available to everybody, no matter where you live, especially during these crazy COVID times. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yay. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure to chat with you today.
Thank you both. I appreciate it so much. And thanks everyone for listening.
Let's talk about Patreon. If you want to support the podcast, we started a Patreon account with different levels of support to choose from, with tons of freebies, discount codes, and more.
The lower tier is just $3 a month, less than your daily latte order. Sarah and I pour so much into this podcast and want to continue to provide you guys with the best. Head to patreon.com/nailyournutrition or check out the show notes to support us. We so appreciate it.
That wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review so others can find it more easily. You can also stay in touch by joining our Facebook group, Nutrition for Runners. If you have any requests for future episode topics and more, email us at nailyournutritioncourse1@gmail.com. Happy fueling!